Right, and everyone's back. Holidays have gone. Issue 10 of the Comics Podcast has arrived out of the blue. I've been away for a week. Apologies for that. I'm back from Brittany. Jeff's been away camping in the high mountains. Paul's been away somewhere.
Eating lobster on the Isle of Wight.
And Kelly has been fielding technical support queries from home, as always.
Make it sound almost exciting.
Yeah, I put it all together. And we're back for issue 10 of the Comics Podcast. Yes, which is going to follow on, as issue 10 has a habit of doing, from issue 9. We tried to fit everything about the comics and the funny strips into issue 9, and we missed out web comics, which is kind of the future or the bit where comic strips are happening now. So that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to do it with the regular crew who are going to introduce themselves apparently today along with their beverage of choice. So, Jeff, what you got for us?
Well, hey, everyone. Geez, what did I grab out of the refrigerator? My beverage of choice today is 1554 from New Belgium. It's an enlightened black ale.
Awesome. Yeah.
Sounds good. Yep.
Paul, this first half of the podcast, you're with us courtesy of?
Goddard's Brewery on the Isle of Wight, Fuggledy-Dum, which is a dark brown amber malty hoppy concoction, which is very nice.
Excellent. I'm going to go next because I've got a lovely bottle of 2009 red wine. It's just red. It's just red. Courtesy of our holiday in France. I've got to make the last glass last because that's all there is left of it. But Kelly, automatic winner, you are brought to us today courtesy of...
My margarita.
Yes.
And the bar that sits just over there in my house.
Anyone that can turn round, walk 10 steps and pull a margarita out of thin air is... you're living your life entirely correctly.
It is pretty fantastic. It's part of why when we bought the new house, I wanted the office to be the bedroom type area downstairs so that I could work across from the bar. That was really what it was about. And now I live the dream.
You know, back in the previous life when we used to go to London Book Show, Bologna Children's Book Fair and things, and all the Americans would turn up. I was just horrified that we'd go out for a meal and the Americans would go, oh, we'll go out at 7 o'clock, and at 8 o'clock they'd be saying, oh, we should be getting back to the hotel now and things. So it's quite heartening to find people on the other side of the Atlantic that are quite prepared to raise a margarita and a sophisticated beer at this time of night rather than tucking themselves up. So, right. So without further ado, we've got some news items to go from the Google Plus Hangout, which we can have a quick spin through. I'm going to do out of order, and then we'll end up on the one that Kelly's probably got most to say about. First of all...
Kelly, having something to say on a subject? Shocked. Yeah, shocked, I say.
I know, but this one's like extra Kelly, so...
Only if Skype holds up.
Yes.
It will be Kelly Palooza.
Oh, no.
But in its own sweet way, $250 for a sculpture of Batman kissing Catwoman.
For $250, that Catwoman sculpture better kiss me.
Yeah.
It's when they say limited edition, are they limited edition because there's only two people in the world that are going to pay that ever?
Oh, I don't know. Andy, have you not gone onto the Forbidden Planet website every so often to see how much those statues are? They are amazingly expensive.
They're not cheap.
No. No. But it just seems to... I don't know.
I think it's two pieces of information here that are hard to reconcile. A, there is a statue that exists of Batman and Catwoman kissing.
Yes.
And B, to have that in your house is going to set you back $250. I can't line those up in my head either.
But there's also a third bit to cram in there, is that somebody has dedicated an enormous part of their life to actually
creating
it. Yes.
There is
Instead
that.
Instead of just closing their eyes and going,
Can I just say that I'm looking at the statue at the moment and they spent an enormous time of the most time of their life sculpting her backside, because that is seriously smooth and chiseled, whereas the rest of it, a little bit less detailed.
You know, I'm not surprised that this sculpture exists. And the fact that people paid $250 for it, that part I have, dare I say, that one's hard to swallow. But having followed this up with a search for Batman and Catwoman pictures, the number of images out there of Batman and parking his Batmobile in Catwoman's Batcave.
Don't.
Boy, howdy. This is a pretty tame sculpture in comparison. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that really need to have their bat porn, apparently.
Mm. Yeah.
I really need to turn Safe Search back on. Enough.
See, you say that, and all I can think of is that moment in Doctor Who when Matt Smith looks at the guy, he takes the laptop from the guy in, like, his first episode, and he looks at him and goes,
"Oh, right.
Get a girlfriend, Jeff."
Yeah. He also
tells I was just thinking that's the first time I've ever heard anyone describe that sort of act as parking the Bat... what was it? Parking the Batmobile. That is just...
Yeah.
That is definitely a comics woohoo.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, given this thing, that there actually... Probably there is a whole world of people out there that are willing to spend $250 on this.
I fear
possibly
what it is that they will do once they have the sculpture.
Yeah.
Dust
now, if you're someone that's willing to buy the sculpture because you think it's beautiful art and it's simply going on display, great.
I suspect it's going to be bought by the sort of person who is over 35 years old, maybe pushing 40, and is still going to come downstairs and say, "Hey, Mum, look what I got."
Okay, yeah, so it's foreplay.
Maybe upstairs. I mean, if he's older.
Yeah, maybe.
And
upstairs.
He's in the basement.
Yes.
Exactly.
Actually, I'll tell you what, can I play devil's advocate for a moment?
Please do.
Because I get the Forbidden Planet mailing list websites, emails, and there are some statues that are fabulously, brilliantly detailed, and his name's going to come up later on in the episode anyway. But Todd McFarlane had a point of time when he was doing... had a company which was making sculptured toys that you could buy across everything, you know, all over the place, pop culture. And he did Halo toys and superheroes and horror film characters and whatever. And my favourite ones of all the ones they did, although they did World the World things are, and they were brilliant statues or maquettes or whatever they were called, but they did the Yellow Submarine Beetles.
Oh, yeah.
And they were wow. Brilliant. They were beautifully detailed. They were fabulously created. And I didn't buy them because they were quite expensive. But there's a part of me that always wishes that I had bought them. And there are some comic character statues that are brilliant. I'll have a look for it in a minute. But I seem to remember one of Spider-Man fighting the Hulk. And it is so beautifully constructed. And modelled and created and three-dimensional, whereas we always think of comics as being two-dimensional. I appreciate the artistry that goes into these maquettes. And, you know, the amount of resin and work and sculpting it takes to make them. Yeah, fair enough. Probably 250 quid possibly covers it. With as much money as they need to make a profit out of it. However, there is no way... I mean, right, maybe Dave... Gravy Gibbons guy. He is in the UK of a pinnacle of art talent that just bores me witless. On the other side of the Atlantic, Jim Lee is the other guy. And Jim Lee artwork just turns me off from the get-go. And if I wanted a Batman kissing Catwoman statue, there are some artists that I would go for and I would look at. Jim Lee's Hush is... so low down on Batman graphic novels and art. I mean, if I'm thinking about Batman classic stories, and Batman is probably the biggest name in comics for event comics that we can turn around to and say that was an event story. Jim Lee's Hush is so far down on the list for me, it's untrue. And it looks silly.
There's a fantastic sculpture of... someone sent me a picture of Judge Dredd merchandising, and there's a sculpture of Judge Death, which is basically just the head on a
yep,
big...
and the smoke.
On the smoke.
Yeah, yep.
Fantastic. That's a sculpture.
I'm sorry, you guys said Forbidden Planet, and I'm down a weird, expensive Doctor Who rabbit hole right now.
Be very careful. I tell you what, if they have you one click ordering, you'd be in trouble by the end of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to register a credit card on there at all.
No.
Anyway, so, yes, Batman kissing Catwoman, I guess there is a market for it. We've also got on the news posted on the Google Plus website was the upcoming release of Recolorizations, which normally strikes fear into the heart of God-fearing men. But this was Recolorizations of the early Nemesis the Warlock strips. For me, did that come across on the microphone? That was my daughter.
Oh, totally.
That was counting, I think. Yeah.
I think that was
See,
Miley
this
Cyrus.
This is an educational show now.
Yes.
I just figured it was some sort of, like, in-joke, you know, about Nemesis that you were playing some soundbite, so I was just going with it. All right.
Yeah, that was my daughter and her Miley Cyrus fixation. So, yes.
I blame the parents.
Another event... event publication. I'm a good dad. Which is why I'm up at 20 to 10 drinking wine doing podcasts.
As you do.
God bless America. Or the Queen, whatevs.
So I guess Jeff and Kelly, probably Nemesis the Warlock, not featured big in your past, but for me, excellent.
No, I haven't the faintest idea.
Paul, I mean, I'm essentially I'm always wary of things like recolorizations, reissues and things, but I can quite go for this.
I tell you what, I have missed Nemesis. You and I are going to have an argument, possibly.
Yes, I know.
Over who's the quintessential. Well, funny enough, I was thinking about this the other day. Pilica's Nemesis is one of my favourite comic book characters, purely because it's very Shakespearean. You've just got the quintessential comes onto stage for everyone to boo and hiss him, bad guy. And you've got Nemesis, who's kind of the good guy, but also shades of grey and leather and, you know, horns and looks like a demon. And it just was so beautiful. But there are so many bits of Nemesis that I look back on that I can look at the artist and think, you were really great. Brian Talbot, me personally, is when I stepped into Nemesis and thoroughly loved him. Kevin O'Neill's brilliant, but there were some guys afterwards who were fabulous as well. I think it's a character that you can draw well and that allows good artists to draw him well. And it's always been black and white. So what they do with the recolorizing, really keen to see.
The later Kevin O'Neill stuff was colour. I mean, obviously, when Brian Talbot took over, I think there was some elements of colour, but I'm sure Kevin O'Neill did some fantastic colour work on the book three, I think, with the giant robots attacking. Maybe that was just the covers. Anyway.
You see, my favourite Brian Talbot part of Nemesis was when they went to the end of the world and humanity had dissolved dissolved back to primeval ooze. And Torquemada was using that ooze as oil to power his war machines in the past. So he was using the future humanity to drive the war machines of, you know, what was the past but still our future. I thought that was brilliantly, circuitously grim and ugly and very Torquemada. But the colour artwork, and it was always the first two pages of Nemesis that were colour, and then the rest was black and white. But there's one bit where the ooze managed to get into abandoned, what was it, deep-sea diving costumes and then come back out and attack Torquemada. And they came out of the sludge and the ooze. That was a brilliant page. I love... And I probably am remembering it completely differently to how it was. But as a kid, picking up a comic... And this quite hard sci-fi idea, you know, I'm reading something about the future. They are going to their future to mine that future for their future, which is my future, but their past. You know, it was dealing with a lot of timey-wimey effects. so brilliantly, and Brian Talbot's artwork, in my mind's eye, that's what I see when I see Nemesis.
I still see the... I mean, I right back at the beginning, I mean, what's weird about Nemesis is that it spawned this whole iconography, it spawned this whole background, the whole sort of termite, Torquemada, everything. And it spawned it from a six-page short story.
Yes.
Based on a single by The Jam called Going Underground.
Oh, of course. Yes, it was, yeah. It was.
And from those six pages, you know, everything else sprang forth, so... Yeah.
How have I not seen this if it came from The Jam?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here doing my Google Foo, and I'm kind of at a loss as to
how
it
is. If you type in Nemesis the Warlock and Going Underground. But anyway, whilst you're typing, Jeff, because I think it's obvious that Paul and I are both stoked by the colour Nemesis, and I guess you two are yet to be stoked. If you could, the other bit of the news was your post that you put up there about the cost of being super,
got Skype issues.
Which was one of your...
Oh, I'm back. Oh, thank goodness.
Oh,
okay, I'm back.
Cool.
Two of you are back. I have no Andy.
I had no sound whatsoever. It went really weird.
Okay.
So there's three of us.
Count as
DHM.
Off. Have you got me?
Oh, there you are. I think you're back.
Awesome.
Yay.
Right, DHM, we're definitely going to have to go down to half a bottle of wine per episode.
So, Jeff, you posted a thing about on Mac Observer, didn't you, about the cost of being a superhero?
Yeah, that was actually kind of cool.
Very cool.
It's a series of infographics that shows what it costs to be a specific superhero, when that superhero was first introduced, and what it would cost today. And so they have Batman and Superman, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and I'm doing
Iron Man, right?
I can't remember. Those are the four that I can remember for sure. And the Hulk was one of them. And it turns out that the cheapest superhero overall is Superman. So apparently Kryptonians are very frugal.
And that's taking the latest movie into account, is it?
Okay. It doesn't take into account collateral damage. Just their day-to-day expenses.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's surprisingly expensive to be Peter Parker, or to be Spider-Man, because dates in New York City apparently are really expensive. And Batman had a huge jump in cost from when he was introduced to what he is now, because he went from wearing basically leotards and carrying a couple smoke pellets to having battle armor and GPS trackers and all kinds of really cool techno toys.
But old Superman, he's just basically just a bit super.
He's just some alien that can live in a cheap apartment and look right through your clothes, ladies.
I was going to say, all that influences him is the cost of spandex.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he must go through a cloak an episode, shouldn't he? They don't last long in a fight. Probably. And also, hang on a second, the Fortress of Solitude, admittedly, the land rates out there in like the North Pole are going to be fairly low, but he's got to have BP and Shell on his back all the time trying to mine oil underneath him.
True.
So you'd think his legal expenses would be really high.
But yeah. Also, his professional indemnity insurance is going to be fairly substantial.
Yep, you'd think so. I would love that team-up, Superman and Daredevil. Superman hires Matt Murdock to do his indemnity for accidentally squashing the Daily Planet's lift again.
That would be kind of awesome. I'd totally read that.
I mean, Batman can obviously do some damage, but Superman could take out the whole planet. So you're going to have to insure against total planet loss with Superman.
That was one of the things about The Incredibles that I thought had so much appeal was the part where you saw consequences of superheroes. Mm. So that was something that I thought was really entertaining when they were suing for damages. Like, on the one hand, it was funny, and on the other hand, it was like, well, duh, how come we haven't ever seen this before? It was pretty, to me, that was one of the things about it that was entertaining.
It is another example of why The Incredibles is not just Pixar's greatest movie, but is one of the greatest movies of all time.
I'm going to have to get that out and watch it again. Okay. I enjoy it.
It's a brilliant movie.
And I'll tell you what, I want to punch that Laura in the face, though, the one that sues him. Which makes him a good character.
Anyway, and to finish off the news, I will take a step back from our microphones now, Kelly, and let you loose on whilst you explain to us why Mark Miller and Seth MacFarlane have recently been out and about explaining why comics really aren't for girls.
Okay, so not Seth. I, at this moment, don't have anything against Seth MacFarlane. Seth MacFarlane is Family Guy.
Todd MacFarlane.
The guy I'm unhappy with is Todd MacFarlane.
Todd MacFarlane, yes. Sorry, Seth. Sorry.
I actually I don't really have anything against Seth MacFarlane. I find him sort of entertaining. Mark Miller, for those who don't know, is the guy behind Kick-Ass. And the thing about Kick-Ass is that it is unbelievably violent, and I don't mean the film. The film is really impressively Tarantino-esque in its violence. From what I understand, I haven't seen it. But people I know who saw it, who are people who are fans of violent movies, are like, whoa, that's a violent, bloody, bloody movie. I read part of the comic, and it's about a kid who dresses up in a suit and decides to go be a superhero because he's read a lot of comic books. And then he meets up with, he comes up against people who are the real deal. And I don't mean like aliens, I mean, and they don't have superpowers, but they are actual people with fighting skills and familiar with weaponry and have escape routes and things like that planned. So I read part of the comic. I really wasn't interested in seeing the movie. And now Mark Miller not only has a second Kick-Ass movie, which is coming out, I think this week, but also is now Joss Whedon's counterpart because he's doing all of the comic movie coordination piece on the Fox half of the film distribution equation. He works for the studio where Joss Whedon works for Marvel and Disney on the sort of creative side. So they probably have to work together a lot. I'm really interested in where that's going to go because Joss Whedon actually writes an interesting woman character once in a while. And by once in a while, I mean ever, because honestly, that's how low the bar is set when you have indoor plumbing and want to see it in comic books. Anyway, Mark Miller came out and said that rape is the same as decapitation for a victim. Because the point of it is to make the hero angry so that the hero will go and do some sort of heroic thing and you can advance plot. I'm not even going to begin to unpack all the things that are wrong with that sentence, but he said it. He said it with a straight face, like it was true, to a room full of people, some of whom were writing down the things that he was saying. I'm not sure if he understands that all of that was happening when he said it. If he did, that's even worse to me somehow. Basically, him and Todd MacFarlane have both sort of said things that boil down to the following few rules. I shall air quote that, rules, about comic books. And they are as follows. As long as comic books have been around, this is how women have been portrayed. And so who are we to argue with all of this history? Are the people like who make comic books. That's who you are. You are people in charge of this sort of narrative. You can do whatever the crap it is you want to do. And if you don't believe me, I know some people at DC you need to talk to because DC went and took all of their history and ran it through a wood chipper and started the hell over again. If they can do it, people who write comics can do it, and they can do it with female characters in comics. Number two, the other thing they said was whenever we put women in comic books, nobody ever wants to read it. Nobody cares about the woman in the comic. Well, with the woman in the comic looks like Barbie, and all you've done with her is cram her in a refrigerator, which is actually a something that is called girl in refrigerator syndrome, which is when you take the girlfriend and you do something horrible to her and it has absolutely nothing to do with her and it's really only about the hero. That's there's a specific name for that. It's not nuking the fridge. It's very close, though, and it's when the point of the girl is to advance the guy's plot. And they basically said, like, anytime we put a woman in a comic or we try to make a protagonist that's a woman, nobody reads it. So why should we try? Well, keep trying, because there are people like me who are going to be really excited about it. And I have a really big mouth. I don't know if you've noticed, but I will tell everyone I know about the awesome comic that you wrote starring a girl. And if you don't believe me, I think that you need to talk to Matthew Southworth and Greg Rucka about Stumptown and all of the people who have stood still long enough for me to go, oh, my God, Stumptown at them. And make them read it. And there are three of those people on this panel with me right now who can attest to this fact. Now then, I don't even know where to go with all the rest of it, but basically what it came down to was, like, girls shouldn't read comic books. We don't write comic books for girls because anytime we put a girl in a comic, nobody wants to read it. And why should we put any girls in comics anyway? Because there haven't ever really been interesting women in comics. Portrayed in comics, and so since that's the way it's always been, that's the way it should always be. I'm going to let everybody else figure out all of the other things that are wrong with that I just don't have enough energy or margarita in my body to continue to talk about. I would rather talk about happy and glorious things, because honestly, the most frustrating thing to me about all of this is that it is not new. They're not the first people to say this. They're not the first people to say this to people who were writing it down and going to report back on it later. They are people who are representative of the comic industry. So anytime anybody ever wants to talk to me about comic books and about girls in comic books or girls who write comic books or any of these things, you need to understand my tolerance for a lot of this crap is really, really low. And honestly, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being told I shouldn't read comic books, because guess what? I read them all the time. And I'm not going to let some little bag of douche like Mark Miller. Oh, you heard me. And I'm not going to let another bag of douche like Todd McFarlane, who, by the way, said one of his idols was Wavy Davey.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. Huh. Like, I didn't have enough things to hate about Todd McFarlane. There's another. And I'm going to do this anyway. And now, in the back of my mind, every time I open another comic book, every time I click continue reading in Comixology, it is a little middle finger out there to the Mark Millers and to the and to the Todd McFarlanes of the world that I'm reading. And you know what? Maybe the problem is just that I'm not reading their comics. But you know what? I need a better hero than a 10-year-old girl who knows how to wield a samurai sword and decapitate people on a regular basis. I need an interesting person. The best Batman stories, we were talking about Batman events. The best Batman events are the ones where you get to see the humanity in Batman. It's one of the things about Superman that people sort of didn't like for a long time was he wasn't human. And we know he's not human, but he never had a flaw. He always saved the day. He always did the right thing. There was no conflict. There was no tragedy for him. So Batman breaks his back. That's a tragedy. We see the human side of him. We see him fall apart. We see him not want to fight crime anymore. We see him despair. And those are the things that are interesting, and those things don't stop being interesting if it becomes Batwoman who is in the tragic state and not Batman. An interesting character is an interesting character. If it happens that the character is a woman, so much the better. That doesn't mean that I need all Batman comics to go away and be Batwoman comics. It doesn't mean that I only ever want to read Wonder Woman, but it does mean that when somebody does a comic like the new Star Wars title, spoiler alert, that's my pick this week, and you turn Princess Leia into a competent X-Wing pilot who not only manages to land her failing engine X-Wing, but when it lands and the TIE fighter that is tailing her follows her to the ground, to the surface of the planet, and she gets out and starts fighting him hand to hand after crash landing her X-Wing, she is badass, and that is awesome. And that was one of the things I always loved about Princess Leia for my entire life. She always did all the stuff the boys could do, and now the comic book is proving that. And you know what? It makes her interesting, and it makes her cool, and it makes that a comic that if I knew a little girl, I would hand her that comic, and I would say, this is a comic that you could read, because I think you will really like it. Screw you, Mark Miller, and the horse you rode in on. And if this, I have so many angry Mac bastard words for him right now, I'm just going to stop and
historic.
Let it go.
Historic.
Now, I can sum up what the problem is in a probably a less passionate way than Kelly did.
Yes, you can.
And I apologize for not having the same passion in my delivery, because Kelly, that was brilliant. You deserve some sort of podcasting award for that. How about if we call it your monologue? So the problem that I see with all of this is that the idea that comics aren't for girls and that women in comics are a supporting tool, a plot movement device. Mm-hmm. I see that as an excuse for you, meaning whoever you are, Mr. or Mrs. Comic Writer, for not being able to write a compelling character. And I don't care what the gender is of that character. You cannot write a compelling character and a compelling story. Therefore, you are using Girls Aren't for Comics as a crutch. And stop doing that. And write me interesting things. Write me another Stumptown. I love Stumptown. But I want something else as well. I want to be able to read these real personal characters that sometimes are women, sometimes are men, or maybe they're talking raccoons or dogs or whatever. I don't care. Write me interesting, compelling characters, and don't use gender, species, whatever, as a crutch for why some people aren't going to like it and why some characters should be written as lesser characters.
Also, I think
I'm gonna share now this quote from Joss Whedon, because Buffy. Joss Whedon is sort of known for writing women who are interesting and flawed and cool. And I remember I was gonna try and put this in the middle of it, but I couldn't quite put it all together, so I had to look it up. And the question that was put to him at one point was, why do you write all of these strong female characters? And his answer was, and I'm quoting, because you're still asking me that question.
That's awesome.
And that's all I have to say about that.
No, I think having, you know, we've got Kelly's response, which is, you know, was very A, emotional, and B, lucid at the same time, which
but
is
we all waited
rare.
Just a minute for just in case.
Set some bots off. Okay.
And Jeff has come in.
Right, Kelly, can I play devil's advocate for a moment?
Oh, can you hear me?
Oh, no, Andy, you go for it. I was just going to wind Kelly up, and I thought, no, I better not.
Okay, you go on. Hang on, you go on. Go on, Paul.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. I was about to say, should women read comic books? I mean, it is utterly, utterly stupid and infuriating, because the industry has painted itself into a corner. But there have always been good female comic book characters. They are just in the massive minority. I mean, going back to Nemesis, Purity Brown is a fabulous character.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they muddied the story towards the end, I seem to remember. But she was a fabulous character standing alongside Nemesis. And had a really good story arc at the beginning. Judge Anderson is fabulous. Halo Jones is fabulous.
Yes.
All of the characters in the Max are fabulous. There are a lot of characters out there. They just don't get the recognition they deserve.
Right.
I don't think. And the problem is the ones that do get the recognition are the stupid, chiseled, steroid muscle heads. And because those are the ones that sell. Because that's the audience that's out there. And we're in this massive...
I think it's because the cool things... There are cool things the guy is doing. And then there happens to be a woman in it. And so when you're drawing a comic that stars a guy and you are a... And I'm going to stereotype here because everybody's been stereotyping me for, like, ever. If you are a guy who writes comic books, you are probably a lot like guys who read comic books, just concentrated more and have the ability to draw or the ability to write it. So if you are that guy and... Aaron Duran, I apologize to you right now because I know you're a comic writer and I know this isn't you, and Matt Southworth and Greg Rucka are also exempt from this, but they're the only three right now. And all the others, they are comic nerds, but concentrated and talented. And those people, or sometimes not, McFarlane. And so what you do is when you are that guy and you are writing the comic that you want to read, you are making Catwoman statues that look like that Catwoman statue. And you're not, and so it's not that anybody's reading it because Catwoman is a fascinating character. They're reading it because they bought it to take home and turn the pages in the hopes that there's a scene where Catwoman walks away. You know, I hate to see her go, but I love to watch her leave. Like, that is the piece that's happening. So it's not always that they're strong characters. It's just that maybe something that the guy is doing is interesting and there happens to be a female character in the vicinity. Mm-hmm. I know there are some good female characters out there, but by orders of magnitude, like, the only... There's maybe a single-digit number of female comic book characters that if you go up to a person and go, hey, have you heard of, there's not going to be that many. It's going to be Wonder Woman, Batwoman, Catwoman, and maybe Supergirl. And, like, off the top of my head, those are the only ones that I can think of. And how many of those are actually male versions or female versions of an existing male hero? Because it's basically everybody but Wonder Woman. She's like the only original female character that if you talk to people, people actually know who she is. Unless I head to you guys' neighborhood where maybe people have heard of Halo Jones. If I said that to anybody here, they would go, isn't that game on the Xbox?
Kelly, have you seen any of the new Avengers series where Susan Storm is one of the team leaders?
I have not.
She is working like directly with Steve Rogers.
And, are you about to cost me more money? Because I think you are.
Well, no, I'm not going to cost you more money initially. go to the Marvel Comics app on your iPad. Mm-hmm. And there's crap. I better find the link so that we can show notes. But one of the new Avengers series that they have going on where it's a small team. Sue Richards is one of the team leaders, and she comes across as a real human, where she goes out on this first mission where they have to take down Magneto for terrorist acts, and so she's really concerned about how she's going to be able to lead this group, but she's a strong leader, so she figures it out and does it. And at one point she calls her husband and she's like, Reed, you know, I'm kind of worried because I don't know if these people actually are on board with me. And he's like, you're Sue Storm, whatever. And then off she goes. And so Captain America and Iron Man are ready to rush in and save the day, assuming that they need to. And she's like, whatever, it's done. And it's I've only read this one issue.
Okay.
And I think it's the first issue where she is a team leader on the Avengers. And as I was reading it, I was like, okay, she's not a perfect character, but I don't want perfect characters. She's someone that has self-doubt but overcomes that. And she successfully leads this team on what turns out to be a very critical mission. So I will find the link so that...
Yes, thank you.
So that everyone can go check it out.
And I think... Can I just... I'll just
actually,
dive
can,
in
I the end. Can I say the one thing that irritates me more? Because I've just been reading while I'm...
No.
You were chatting about... I've been reading the interview again with McFarlane and Miller. Because there was something that bugged me about it. And I can't remember what it was at the time. And... the thing that really, really, really irritated me the most was one of his quotes were that he wanted to use rape in the same way that he'd use a decapitation in a comic. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we've become so desensitized to violence in comic and in media and film and whatever that mm-hmm. decapitation doesn't mean anything. I mean, The Lord of the Rings was more or less a children's fantasy film that ended with the decapitation of the bad guy at the end. And you get decapitations in all sorts of things. I mean, you know, there are films, animated films for the whole family, where a decapitation is kind of... There is a hint at it to amuse the adults watching a children's film. So, for example, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I love, still has a fight at the end
where Steve the monkey rips the head off a jelly baby, jelly baby sweet that's coming to attack him, and rips the heart out of another one, like Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. And it was, at the time I was thinking, it's okay, I can see why you've done it, but it's still a children's film where one character has ripped the heart out of another one. And we've become, that's become something that can be put into a children's film. And I thought, rape is, it's just the ugliest crime that I can think of. And to get a writer saying that a world that's become desensitized to violence, like, you know, decapitations, mm-hmm. I think you should be equally desensitized to rape. I don't like that. So I really think it's an ugly way of looking at the world. And I was reading the interview again, and there is a lovely quote by, I'm just trying to find it because I want to read it in full, because I think it is a perfect retort to what Mark Miller and Todd McFarlane said, which is by Joseph Hughes of Comics Alliance. And I love what he said, because it is, it's the best way of getting, saying to Mark Miller what is, you know, what should be said to him, which is, in a culture which rape is undeniably endemic, Miller's steadfast refusal to consider the potential ramifications of his work remains astounding, infuriating, irresponsible, and sad. To pretend to depictions of rape and sexual assault in popular media, popular fiction, play absolutely no role in further informing a culture that seems largely hell-bent on not dealing with these statistics is willfully ignorant, and a position adopted by a writer more concerned about money. And that is the perfect response to Mark Miller. Mm-hmm. Because it's just any sort of, I mean, the whole, you know, woman in the fridge syndrome, but the whole violence against women, it should be shocking. I'm not saying it has no place in media or comics, but if it is there, it should shock and make you feel sick and ugly, and as if you've witnessed something horrible, which not which, be the, another example, decapitation on page 12.
The killing joke scene where Barbara Gordon is attacked by the Joker.
Yes. Absolutely. You feel like you've been punched in the stomach.
If you're going to commit violence,
you?
Against a woman, that is how it's, you know, that is a textbook example of how to portray.
Here's why. Because Barbara Gordon is someone that you care about. She is interesting. She's three-dimensional. She doesn't just, you know, show up in her underwear and serve people cocktails, and then all of a sudden she's dead and, oh, that's terrible. No. And it's part of why, because we all know, as much as Joss Whedon loves a female character, one of the few things he loves anywhere near as much is whacking them in the middle of a season. So when you are watching something or reading something that is his, and you are now invested in this female character and now history, it hurts. And it hurts because you care about them. And I think that's part of the desensitizing. It goes hand in hand with being desensitized to violence. Because you have a point, like, it is kind of a serious thing. But on the other hand, remember that Bambi is how old? And in the first 5 minutes, Bambi's mom gets shot. And that's considered a kid's movie. Mm. And yeah, if you want to take a minute, think about how many main characters in Disney movies have two parents. Because there aren't. I think there's three. And one of them is 101 Dalmatians. Not even joking. Like, Belle doesn't have a mom. Cinderella doesn't have a mom. Sleeping Beauty's parents are completely MIA for the entire time. I'm trying to remember the other princess. Ariel doesn't have a mom. Jasmine doesn't have a mom. So, and on and on.
Simba has a mom.
Yeah, he does, but no dad.
No.
Because
enough.
Hamlet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Hamlet. Yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, it's been about long enough. I'm waiting for those kids to get to high school who grew up on The Lion King and start reading Hamlet and go, this guy ripped off The Lion King. Anyway,
I'm going to pile in at the end with the fourth thing, because I think, you know, everyone's covered various elements of this entire snafu. But for me, it's like, we've got two guys, Mark Miller, Todd McFarlane, who are big names, big names in comics, and we have to assume reasonably smart guys, you know, people with smarts, with intelligence, with chops that are, you know, have worked their way up through the fact that they've got some kind of thinking process going on in their heads.
They've read, if nothing else.
And to me, it's like,
they wrote.
What is so depressing is that the litany going through the things, you know, why women aren't portrayed in comics, why we don't do this, why we don't do that. It's like 30 seconds, 45 seconds maximum thought would expose to you as a rational person the logical fallacy, the complete non sequitur of your thought process at this point. And it's like, and therefore, back up, reconsider. I mean, for example, Mark Miller particularly is always banging on about pushing the boundaries. I mean, like, you know, Kick-Ass with in the movie, he was so chuffed that they kept the C-bomb in with Hit Girl because he was saying, oh, this is, you know, this is, we're really pushing the envelope here. And then he kind of reels it back in and says, well, with women characters, we can't push the envelope because, you know, the envelope's never been pushed. And who are we to push the envelope? It's like, yeah, once you're going to eviscerate somebody or you're going to have a 10-year-old girl swearing her head off, we can push any envelope we want. Back in the women's side of things.
Guy, like, that was the thing that killed me about it. He's like the poster child for deconstruction and, you know, doing all of these things when it's guys.
Yeah.
And so to listen to him go, oh, we can't do that because history, I'm like,
and it's
have
like,
you met you?
And it's like, and we've never had a female character so-and-so before in comics. Comic strips don't do this. It's like, you're the guy. You're the guy with the imagination. You're the guy that's always telling us that nobody did this before I did this. Back up. And it's just that the depressing for me, yes, you know, there's the bits that you talked about the actuality of women in comics and things, but for me, I was reading the article and I was thinking the paucity of the thought process behind his thoughts was just stunning. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, maybe he went home and looked over his notes and went, God, I shouldn't have said that. We have to hope he said he thought that. He certainly didn't come back and say, I retract everything, so maybe he didn't.
No.
But
and he probably didn't, and that, to me, that's, like, even worse, that he doesn't see what's wrong with what he said. And not only does he not see what's wrong and own it, you know, yeah, I know I pushed the envelope, but, like, it's only for dudes, because, like, I'm a dude, and I don't know anybody, not a dude, and dudes and bro. You know, like, if he would own it and just be like, yeah, I said it, and, you know, maybe if you're a girl that read comics, I pissed you off, and oh well, go back to buying shoes. Like, if he would just at least own it, I'd be a little bit more okay with it somehow. But he really doesn't act like, yeah, I know I'm kind of being a jerk face, and this is the way it is. You know, I didn't mean to offend anybody. That's just really what I think. And if he could get that far, like, he doesn't understand that what he's saying is completely idiotic.
Hmm. I must admit that we have a slight dichotomy coming because Kelly's news item is overrun somewhat.
We're not going to do web comics again, are we?
No. we've done that. We're going to do better than Wavy Gravy. We're going to do some.
Why don't we skip it this week and just be just talk about awesome stuff instead?
Yeah, you know what. Stuff.
Web comics. Screw that guy. He's not worth our time.
No.
Kelly, I found that issue that I wanted to tell you
about. Yay!
And it's something that, had it not been just a freebie to download from the Marvel Comics app, I would have completely missed. But it's from the Share Your Universe series that Marvel did in 2010. And it's the Iron Man issue.
Okay.
And the Iron Man issue happens to be about the Avengers.
Yay!
Because, of course, why wouldn't it be about the Avengers instead of
You know, yeah.
And as it turns out, it's really more of an Invisible Woman story.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent. So let's talk webcomics.
Yeah, so this week, I think we'll just assume on the basis that everybody that we can think of is better than Wavy Gravy, and we'll come back to that next week. And we're going to talk about, obviously, last week, the week before last. Previous issue. We talked about the traditional comics in the funniest of the newspapers. this week we're going to go over web comics, which is where I guess, you know, in the current, you know, it's where the action is, where the stuff is happening in that sort of sphere, because purely because it allows people to create, host and monetize and their own stuff that wouldn't get syndicated normally. So
it's like desktop publishing was back in the day. It's one of those things that the great and terrible thing is that the great thing about it is anybody can have a webcomic, and the terrible thing about it is anybody can have a webcomic.
But as with all these things, you know, content is king, and quality does float to the top. I mean, there are webcomics that are acknowledged universally to be good, XKCD.
Which is stick people. I just feel the need to point that out. It's not stupendous artwork. No. It's not always some really fantastic, wonderful scene that has been set and lovingly, you know, lovingly beautifully drawn. It's a lot of stick people.
Mm. But it's so not even about the art. I mean, XKCD is purely about the words. It's this is the joke. And we've thought about it, and this is the minimal amount of artwork that we have to provide for you to get the joke. Off you go.
And very clever, because they use alt text. So if you've never been to XKCD, here's all the history I know about XKCD. Randall Monroe is a wonderful fellow who writes XKCD. And if you read the early stuff, there's a lot of math jokes that completely fly over my head. Like, there's a whole wiki that will explain them to you. If there's somebody like me who doesn't get, like, super unbelievably ridiculously advanced math, then you can go there and look it up and find out why it's funny. But if you leave the mouse over the image of the comic, you get the alt text for the comic. And it's like a bonus punchline every time you read the comic, because you get, you know, you read it and you're like, hee-hee, and then you mouse over and you get, you know, the little alt text pop-up that says, and this is why we can't have nice things. And you're like, da-ha-ha! And it's great. Randall Monroe is awesome, and he's ridiculously smart, as evidenced by the math comics that he puts out. And he likes to do some things that are really great as a joke, and it doesn't matter who you are to find them funny in some of the ones that he does. So a couple of my favorites, one of them is directly day job related, and that is Correct Horse Battery Staple. Where he talks about the amount of entropy in passwords and how it's trombone, but I used a zero and then I put an exclamation point at the end. So there's this much entropy, which means guessing it would take like 6 hours. And then he says, you know, and impossible to remember. So you have it on a sticky note under your keyboard. So now, you know, it's totally easy to hack you. And then he says, or you have this one, and it's a horse saying, that's a battery staple. And then above it, there's someone else who says, correct. And it says, correct horse battery staple. And it's got like a bajillion bits of entropy, and guessing it would take 600 years. And he says, and you already have it memorized. Which is totally true. And again, dropped it off the top of my head, correct horse battery staple. And sometimes the comics are personal. Like he had, I think it was his girlfriend.
Didn't they just to pop? Did they follow that up with the which is most likely one, where the guy was like going, "Oh yeah, supercomputer cracks your password in 60 million years," and the two guys with like a big hammer going, "Beat him until he tells me his password."
Yeah, that's probably more. Yeah, like, never found underestimate. In a
yeah, never yeah. underestimate the power to crack a password with a Louisville Slugger.
Yes. So the other thing about the comic is that sometimes he just writes about personal stuff. It's one of the things that he uses kind of as an outlet. And so every once in a while, you'll be reading through. There's an app for XKCD, an iOS app. If you're like me and don't go to the website all that often, and then you just binge on them and read like a month at a time. And it really will affect your speech. There's sometimes there's a day or two when Mr. Kelly has no idea what I'm talking about. Like, you'll be reading along, and you'll be like, oh, and then the next one will just be absolutely heartbreaking. And it's just, you know, him working out, like, you know, here's all the things I do when I'm spending time in the hospital waiting for somebody. And, it's one of those things where just every once in a while, it'll get you right in the feels, as the kids say. And that's one of the reasons I really like it, is because it does both. Well, it does three things. It will make you laugh, and it will make you smarter, and occasionally it will make you very sad. And again, it has to do with investment in the characters, and they're stick people.
Mm. But do you think, for webcomics, the idea is there's a whole slew of industries, and Kelly mentioned desktop publishing, which was one of the things that switched over a long ago to computerized creation. Made things easier, made things more accessible, made more people able to produce stuff. Back in the day when I was at college, people wanted to be photographers and cameras were expensive, dark rooms, film, all this stuff. If you wanted to be a photographer, you had to invest. And magical people that took brilliant photos. And then Flickr came along and digital cameras and everyone went, you know what? There's a world of people out there that can take photographs. And then comics, you've got to get a distribution deal. You've got to be signed by Marvel. You've got to have a writer. You've got to, all this stuff. And then webcomics come along and everyone goes, there's these people out there. There's so many people with stuff to say and talent to say it. And I know that there's a filtering mechanism to be had. Stuff's good, stuff's bad. But the essence is there are a lot of people with a lot of talent. And webcomics is the strong point of webcomics for me is that, it allows you to find these people.
Mm-hmm. And for them to find an audience. Like Penny Arcade is an example of a couple of people who had a good idea, or what they thought was a good idea. We're going to draw a comic about two guys that hang out and play games like a lot. And it was them. It was Gabe and Jerry. And that's what they do. And now it's like a business. Like at one point it was, we're thinking about maybe we could make this a full-time thing. Now it is a full-time thing. Now they have employees. Like PAX is a monster. Child's Play, which I think is the best thing that they ever did, was Child's Play. And here's what's kind of awesome about it. There was a guy that wrote this article that was like, people who play games are horrible people. You see these articles every once in a while after a school shooting. Someone goes, Halo is the undoing of Western civilization, or Grand Theft Auto, or whatever. And they said, we want to change that. We want to do something awesome for people. And we want everybody who plays games to help us do this awesome thing. And we worked with and they live in Seattle. So they worked with a children's hospital in Seattle and said, we want to give them a bunch of game stations, like not a PlayStation, a game station. And it's like a little cart, like AV equipment was when we were in school. And we want to get everybody to donate. So we put up an Amazon wish list. So go buy stuff off the wish list and ship it to the address. And we're going to take it to them on Christmas. And the kids have no idea. And we're going to just show up and give them all this stuff. And it's going to be awesome. And we want to do something good and show that gamers can do something good. And the first year, they put everything in their garage until it was full, and then they used someone else's garage until it was full, and then they had a friend whose company had just rented a warehouse, and they hadn't moved in yet, so they got to use that, and like it was super full. And so every year now, they work with a bunch of children's hospitals all over the country, and you just go to Amazon and find the Child's Play wish list, and you can buy whatever, and you can buy something yourself. You can buy as little as like a 4-pack of AA batteries for somebody's Game Boy. You can go in with a bunch of people and buy a Wii or an Xbox or games for those. And they do it every year, and it's awesome, and it's just another piece of something that they did that started as these two guys that happened to have a web server in like 1997 or something, and decided to start writing a comic about games, and now here they are. Like, people I know who don't even know what Penny Arcade is have totally heard of PAX.
Mm.
And actually, it's a damn good comic.
Yeah, it is a good comic.
It does have its
moments. I have to jump us out of our current topic for a few minutes, because that's how we roll. And and I'm going to take us into animation. And if you guys haven't had the opportunity yet to experience Don Hertzfeld's animation, you need to make that happen. Don Hertzfeld it's a stick figure style artwork where the humanity in his characters is in some cases more real than if you had a live actor portraying the role. And he takes on just in some cases, very twisted topics. Like he has this one video or one movie he made, and everything's pretty much shorts except for the most recent things he's been working on, where he's doing a series or finished a series about this man that we can only assume has some sort of mental issue, but you're not really sure because you just can't tell. But he does things like this video called Billy's Balloon, where balloons are sentient and little kids are in a park and they have their toy balloons and the balloons start attacking them. And it's brilliant, and it's funny, and it's twisted, and you watch it, and you keep saying, oh my God, I can't believe he just did that. And yet you can't stop looking. And it's one of those series, or he's one of those artists where the artwork he creates, it could be done as a comic, but he chooses to do it as hand-drawn, frame-by-frame animation as a movie. And his work is just brilliant. And as we were talking about the very simple drawing styles that some people are using, I started thinking about Don and realized I'm doing a disservice by not derailing us and letting you guys know and all of our dear listeners know you have to go check out Don Hertzfeld. How's that for a derail?
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I'm all distracted now because I'm like looking at still images of the stuff that he's done. It's pretty great.
I'm looking at, well, see the guy that did My Spoon Is Too Big?
That's exactly the guy.
I knew I'd heard the name, but I couldn't remember why.
Yes, and that's a line from Rejected, which is brilliant.
Oh, Rejected. I have seen Rejected.
Okay, so you've seen Don Hertzfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something about watching this thing where he does it as if it's a documentary about a project, advertising projects that he'd been contracted for that went wrong. And you're just sitting there watching this, and all of a sudden this guy goes, my spoon is too big. And the next guy walks in and goes, I am a banana. And the vacuum starts playing. And you're watching it, and you're going, what the frack did I just see? And
oh, yes.
You can't stop.
Okay, so, Jeff, have you seen the adapts? On YouTube, there's a channel called ASDF. And it's my daughter watches it because she loves that channel on YouTube. And it is like Don Hertzfeld for teens.
ASDF?
Yeah, ASDF.
I'm making a note so I can go look later.
I'll put a link in our little Skype chat thing. Oh, just don't play it now. I was about awesome. To click on it. I thought, no, come on. But it's like Don Hertzfeld. It's a little bit less abstract. But Rejected was fantastic.
So, all right. So everyone that's listening, take a break. Go to Don Hertzfeld's channel on YouTube, watch some of his videos, come back, we'll continue the show. Don't worry, we'll be here waiting.
Yes, I think I'm sort of to go on for the webcomics thing, we've chatted about, you know, the big guys in, you know, PAX and SKCD and why webcomics work for people and things. I thought what we'd do is combine the picks, because I know we've got picks which were not webcomics, which we could probably would make more sense last week, but we've got a lot of picks of webcomics as well. So if we go through those, I think it probably makes more sense to say we'll make the webcomics the picks.
Yes.
Because we've all got several that we like, and we'll go from there. So I think, Jeff, you've picked up, you just was going to be a pick on its own the other week, and now it's back in as webcomics, which was Castle What's Its Name, which...
Oh, yes.
It's a little bittersweet, because obviously the artist, the lady that draws it's obviously been struggling.
Yeah, it's Castle What's Its Name is it's a story that I'm enjoying. I like Kira's artwork, and you can tell that this is something that's coming right out of her soul. And so I can only assume that the troubles and issues that you see in the stories are coming from her. And they might be allegories for something in her life, or they might just be things that are tucked away in her head somewhere. But I'm really drawn into Castle Wetzitzning because I feel like it's not just someone coming up with an interesting story. I feel like it's someone that is kind of like peeling back their own skin and sharing this rawness that's underneath. Well, that sounded creepy, now didn't it?
Not for comics.
No.
Yeah, not for comics. Yeah, it's a storyline that I'm compelled to read because I feel like something is being shared with me that goes beyond what the comic is. And so I want to keep reading to see what else Kira is going to share with us if we only take the time to listen.
That's one of the webcomic things, isn't it? If you took the plots and the storylines of Castle What's Its Name and you took them to a comics thing and said, this is my idea, they'd be looking at the broad picture and they'd be saying, well, nobody's interested in this. Where's the first fight? Where's the conflict and things? But obviously, in the domain of webcomics, there are enough people that, like yourself, have picked up and said, there's something here that I am interested in, I want to know more about, that I identify with. And that's, it's never going to be enough to justify a print run and distribution and warehousing and things. But it's because it is so well done, because the artwork is good, because the characters are good, because it's, and because the storyline, as you said, is so compelling that you feel that you're being allowed into someone's mind. There's obviously something there it seems to, obviously.
Yeah, it's. Well, Kira has created a trust, and she's trusting us with something that she has tucked away in her head. And so she has trusted us with that. And so now we have to give back a little trust. And for me, that trust that I'm giving back comes in the form of going back and reading the new pieces as she releases them. That's awesome. Happy touchy-feely episode now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's just a shame. Obviously, if you go to the website, you just get the first post where she feels that she's had to take a hiatus because it's been impinging on her personal life too much.
People have to have priorities, regardless, whatever. People have to have their priorities. So go back and read what is there. And then maybe we put some trust in Kira that she will be able to start writing again soon.
Cool.
Yes. Excellent. And also, that's one of the things that characterizes a surprisingly large amount of webcomics is, the quality of the artwork and the line work and things. And her drawings and stuff are really lovely. I mean, it's all sort of a pencil rather than an ink feel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's really very personal artwork.
Yes, it is. Yes. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was going to skip on in a sort of... In a relatively fatuous and hosting styly to Kelly.
What I want to do is piggyback on that with the personal and peeling back the top of your head and letting people peek inside your brain. A comic that I enjoy, which is probably at the opposite end of the workmanship scale of art, is Hyperbole and a Half.
Oh, what an awesome
Which
choice.
Which is beautiful, like, in its oddity, in its... there's a whole story about cake, and I wanted that cake. I wanted that cake more than life itself. It was somebody's birthday, and nobody was in the kitchen, and I ran in and I ate all the cake, and it was awesome for about a half an hour, and then misery. And then all I could think about again was the cake. And, the whole story, and if you got, I put the link in the show notes. You guys can go look, and you get a very clear idea of what you're in for artistically. But this one that's up here right now is Depression Part 2. And it's, like, it's, I mean, it's kind of brutal. Like, there's moments of entertainment in it, but it sort of talks about being depressed and not wanting to get out of bed, not wanting to do anything, not wanting to feel better. And anyone who's ever come close to this is reading this and going, oh my God, that's me. And there's like a bajillion comments on the post that are like, that was me too. That was me too. And like, you know, the horrible voice in the back of your head that's always talking you out of, you know, out of doing something better, feeling better. And then like what it's like, because other people are all telling you, why can't you just feel better? Why can't you, you know, why can't you just smile more or whatever? And like, as a comic, this is an epic comic. It's really entertaining. Everything is really amusing. Like, all the stories are great. The story about moving across the country with the dog was really funny. And so then to read some of those and sort of like Jeff was saying, you know, about the about Kira and her, you know, like having some trust in her and her having enough trust to unleash this sort of, you know, brutal statement of like, you know, peeling back the skin. This is the same sort of thing, and it's really touching because you're sort of watching someone go through this, and but it's great as a comic, and some of them are really entertaining. The one that's up there right now is sort of sad, and talks about like, this is why I haven't done very much. There might be more when I'm feeling better about all of this, and I just want to let you know. And so that's all. And I love Hyperbole and a Half. It's one of the random, odd comics that really entertains me. And I will go ahead and toss in the other one that really entertains me, which is The Oatmeal.
Yes.
Because 1-2-3 Death.
yes.
I love this comic. I love The Oatmeal so much. It's another one that there's more art to The Oatmeal than there is, I think, on Hyperbole and a Half. But some of it is terrifically nerdy, like why Nikola Tesla was the greatest geek who ever lived. And then there's other things that are on there that are just beautiful and hilarious, and you can buy prints of some of the work. And The Terrible and Wonderful Reasons Why I Run Long Distances, and My Dog, The Paradox, and Signs That Your Cat Is Trying to Kill You, and some of these things. And they're really entertaining. Some of it is sort of warped, and some of it is super hilarious. And I love all of it. He's got a print of like all kinds of some of the crazy bits of stuff that he's put out over the years. There's some really entertaining greeting cards that are really funny. Bear Odactyl, one of my favorites. Some people may remember The Oatmeal from trying to raise enough money for a Nikola Tesla museum. There was a defamation lawsuit against him that had a very entertaining outcome. I really think that Matt Inman is smart and funny, and this is another one of those. I don't know that the world would ever have gotten a good look at his talent if it hadn't been for the fact that he could build his own website and put it out there for people to see.
I think it's definitely the Hyperbole and Oatmeal are two examples of that sort of, particularly Hyperbole, if you've taken the art work to anyone, you know, laugh in your face time. It's like,
yeah,
absolutely. So what the hell are you showing me this for? This is a joke. You're an idiot. And yet when you look at the, it's bizarre. I mean, there's like,
You get three panels in and you don't care.
No. And but the, you know, the naivety of the drawing and the colors and the stuff is inconsequential compared to the pacing and, you know, the lack. It's one of those bizarre examples of how art is almost an intrinsic human feature, that you don't need any talent to draw. If you've got this artistic ability and feeling, you can get it down, and you can, and it'll be there, and
the faces in the story, I'll have to find a link to the story about the cake, because it's the one that hooked me on Hyperbole and a Half. But, like, the faces of, you know, I was very small and I was young and I stared through the window at that cake. And you look at that face and it is exactly what a little kid looks like when they are staring at an unobtainable object, which is the thing they want the most in all the world, in this universe and any other. And, like, that face is just perfect. And you don't, you know, you don't worry so much about what it looks like. You get, again, 2-3 panels in, you quit caring because now you're into the story. Like, what happens? Did they get the cake? What happens with the cake?
Right. And those drawings done on a trackpad.
Hmm.
Really?
Yes. Worst of all drawing implements.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But the drawings, they are part of the personality of...
Oh, they totally are.
And if someone went and redrew, like if a professional artist was hired to do the art for those stories, something would be lost.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's down to it really, for me, it's down to looking at the characters and, you know, as it goes on through the strip, through the story, you know, the pacing, the space, the pauses and everything that need to be there are all there in the artwork. It's very impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes.
So I have to give a quick shout out to another comic I enjoy. It's very quick. Megan Heaton, who also writes for Tua, she's one of our editors. She has a comic that is called Namesake, and it's pretty fantastic. You can read it. You can read the whole thing online. They've put some books together. You can get. I'm not sure if you can get all the volumes now or not. There's like a pre-order situation for the third book. And it does look like there are soft cover versions of the others in stock, and you can get ebook versions for $5. It's just the strip collected into volumes. And Megan does it with another artist who her name is completely escaping me. I want to say it's Isabel. And they built Namesake, and Namesake is a fun comic to read. So if you get a chance, I would totally suggest checking it out. If for no other reason, then it comes back to my women in comics thing. And Megan and Isabel are talented and went out and built one that's about girls and by girls. And I think that's also really awesome, too. And it's a good story. So check it out.
Excellent. Cool. Paul, have you got anything in the web comic sphere for us?
I think we lost him.
Do we have Paul?
Do we have Paul?
No, I'm pretty
I
sure.
I believe he fell off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his pick was going to be Tim Lee's Hush.
Yeah, it sounded like earlier, didn't it? That he was that. I mean, my sort of webcomic things is there's two there that people have been clicking through. One I have picked up on earlier, which is a very young people's orientated one, but I do love the art and I love the characterization of children as normal people.
Yay!
Which is, you know, is an interesting thing. It's very difficult to do. It's a webcomic called Bad Machinery, which is a bunch of school children in England that live in go to a normal school in a normal town, and they get together and they solve mysteries. And as the strip goes on, the mysteries do get more and more complex and more weird. And the current mystery is a time traveling one, so there's obviously elements of stuff going on there. But the characters beautifully delineated, the world they live in beautifully delineated, the simple-ish art, but really nice.
Oh, I like it.
It's really nicely done, and there's a lot of words in there for a strip. There's a lot of writing piled in,
yeah,
as well. But it's for me, it's so well done. I do love it. And it's unusual because of the market that it's aimed at. It's, you know, it does spill out of the teen market. There's very little in there that is traditionally child orientated. Mm. It's a very sophisticated strip, imagery wise and plot wise and character wise, which makes it nice to read as an adult. But it's also obviously designed to be read by children as well, as a sort of gateway and entry into more thoughtful and sophisticated comics, which is a good thing. You know, if you can get children off of in some ways, there's nothing wrong with X-Men, there's nothing wrong with Batman, there's nothing wrong with any of the Flash Power stuff. It's all good. But there is other stuff, and it's difficult to find it. And I think that something like Bad Machinery is a good gateway to say, oh, the story, the characters, it's all still good. And mysteriously, I'm interested in this very static world that's going on, which is a very...
And let me point out, they make it very easy to reel in, because like I just went and loaded the page, and at the top it says previous, back to the start of this case, back to the very beginning. So you can jump in now, or you can back up and find out what it is they're talking about this minute, or you can go back to the absolute start. And anybody that makes it easy for me to go back and catch up, I am happy with. So I'm all into this one.
Yes. Yes, no, that's good. Quite often there's a case of, and the one that I'm going to come to now is slightly worse because it's basically a Tumblr page which is rejigged. But the artwork is very good, which is the Abominable Charles Christopher, which is at Abominable CC, which is more of a traditional webcomic in terms of the fact that the guy that writes it and draws it is a professional artist who's worked for DC and Marvel and things, and this is obviously his pet project. But it does mean that the actual sort of content is of
oh my gosh,
pretty high standard, and it's nice, and it flicks day by day, week by week through different ranges of characters. You know, it's not always about Charles Christopher, who's a Sasquatch creature, from the backwoods of Milwaukee. But there's other creatures and there's other storylines that flick in and out. Are you back, Paul?
I am, yep. Hiding in the background.
This is fantastic.
So, yeah, The Abominable Charles Christopher. It's a really nice strip. The artwork is fantastic. The chap that draws it is obviously... he's busted his chops in the proper comic world. Carl Kirchy, he's done Superman, he's done The Flash, he's done all this sort of stuff for Marvel, he's done it for DC, and this is his pet project, and it's well worth it.
His sidebar says, working on an Assassin's Creed comic at the moment.
Yes. So, yeah, busy. Miss Paul, what have you got there?
Well, actually, I'll tell you what, I love all the picks that you've picked, because I don't think I feel like I've seen any of them. And now I'm going to be reading the wretched thing, so thanks a lot. There goes my sleep for the night. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to do Jeff and cheat and go back to animation for a second. I love Strong Bad and Homestar Runner.
And
yes, it's animation, and yes, it's Flash animation. But the characters are so brilliant, and it would work as a comic book as much as anything else. And if you want good, strong female characters, Teen Girl Squad are your guys. I mean, they're just fabulous. And
I love everything
about Homestar and Strong Bad, I love to pieces. The voice acting is brilliant. And it is, and it's not a web comic, it's a web animation, but it's the high watermark. When I was working at a computer games company called DI, and we would just be hanging on and pressing refresh, waiting for the next comic to come up. We could all sing along to Trogdor. We would all, and the Trogdor comes in the night. We would all sing that along. It was just brilliant. Loved Homestar Runner and Strong Bad. So that is a web animation. I mean, it's not a comic. It's moving animation. But it would work perfectly as a comic. It works perfectly as a website. But in terms of comic...
And a game. It's also a game, and it's super fun.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just brilliant. I love Homestar.
I have it on the Wii. You can play it. It's one of those click and point-and-click story-based, like Sam and Max.
Mm.
It's like that, but Homestar.
Cool.
And Strong Bad.
Actually, I think it's done by the same guys in Telltale. Possibly.
I think so.
Right, but in terms of comics... There's a guy called Ryan Andrews, and I wanted to pick him as a pick of the week a little while ago. I think I might have done, I can't remember. But he does a number of web comics that are gloriously beautiful, and they're so well drawn, they're so well done. And he did one called Sarah and the Seed, and not only does it have a beautiful female character in, but an elderly... Mm. Female, beautiful which is even less done in comics. And he handled it brilliantly. He did a comic called This Was Our Pact, which is what I wanted to pick, because I remember reading it and being really moved by how perfectly well it was done. And I went on to look at This Was Our Pact, and he's had to... He had to take it down. He's taking it down because it's now going to be published as a comic. So it's not free anymore, and you can't look at it online. Because it's going to be published in the next couple of years. Actually, I think it's a really long lead time. I think it's not due to be published to 2016. But if you do a search for Ryan Andrews webcomics or comics, you will get his artwork. Sarah and the Seed is a really heartbreaking and touching comic. It's all free. So you can go through the whole thing. There's other comics on there, but Sarah and the Seed and the Pact were the ones that moved me the most. Beautifully drawn. But he does... I'll tell you what, if I was to parallel it to anything, I would say it's like a Ghibli film, Studio Ghibli film.
Yes.
In as much as you've got these characters who are elderly or who are like socially isolated or whatever, who comic books don't really do because they don't really understand. He does them, and he does them brilliantly. And to see this really... sad story of a elderly woman who always wanted kids and then is given a seed and wants to make it grow and the husband doesn't understand it. Beautifully done. Beautifully illustrated. Really, really heartbreaking and heart-wrenching and fabulous stuff. So Ryan Andrews. And lastly, just as a back on the web comics type stuff, it's not a comic because there isn't a comic to follow, but it's a concept artist called Ian McHugh, which is M-C-Q-U-E, and he's on Twitter, at Ian McHugh. His artwork is brilliant, and I've emailed it to Andy because it is like Mick McMahon with knobs on, painted, and he's doing a comic book at the moment. He's putting sketchbook pages up on Twitter. His artwork is phenomenal. So it's not a webcomic, it's webcomic art. But I tell you what, every time he puts up a piece of artwork on Twitter, I am instantly there. I am instantly clicking on it. It's not a sequential story, but it will be at one point. But to see the making of it at the moment is quite fascinating. And that's not my phone beeping.
No. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think you know, in some ways, I think there's a whole load of webcomic stuff. We might have to do webcomics part two because we have kind of skipped along a wee bit. But we are up at the 1:30 hour, so I think we're going to cut it there. And I think we'll definitely come back and do webcomics part two. Next, we've done the picks. I think it's time for me to thank UK2 in my own inimitable rambling fashion. Pointing out that whilst other web services are available, they may or may not be better or worse than UK2.net, who provide all the bandwidth.
I'm from the United States, so it's okay for me to say, hey, they're better, just use them.
Yes, comparative advertising, it's legal in the States. UK2.net pick up all the bandwidth for the British Tech Network, which isn't an inconsiderable amount, which is cool. And in return, you know, they you can go to the British Tech Network's website. You can click on the links that they've got there. You can get access to discount codes for all of the services they do, right down from, you know, buying domain names, which is the bread and butter of the whole thing, all the way up to, you know, dedicated servers. In which case you can save yourself a pretty penny. And I think most of the people that have gone from the network to there will agree that it's been worthwhile. The customer service is cool. The prices are excellent. What's not to love? And they make sure that when you hit the download button in iTunes on the podcast, you get the podcast. So that's all good. I promised Carl I'd write something down and I didn't. So that was off the top of my head. Sorry, Carl, I'll do that next week. I'll write it down.
It's also entirely possible that without them, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast, because if they weren't picking up BTN's bandwidth, then there wouldn't have been room for us to piggyback onto that. So we wouldn't even have this opportunity.
Yeah, when people come up to you and say, can we do a podcast on this? He can say yes, because, you know, he knows that.
Because UK too.
Yeah. So, well done.
So we especially love them because they make this possible.
Yes. Exactly, and it's not their target audience. It's not, you know, a tech network thing. We're kind of just here on the outskirts and stuff. So I know that Jeff's got to go. You said I had to go by a certain time. I suspect we've blown through your certain time.
By just a touch.
So where can we find you, Jeff?
Well, you can find me at the Mac Observer, which is macobserver.com. You can find me on the British Tech Network, on The Big Show, and here. I know, surprise. And from what I hear, apparently I've like taken control over the network. So I promise to be a benevolent overlord. You can find me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamm at both places. And Apple Context Machine, we have communicators. And go check out freshbrewdetails.com. Just Google me, people. I'm everywhere.
Jeff and I are going to start a podcast just to keep track of all our podcasts.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a good idea, particularly for Jeff, who does own the network.
That's right.
So, Paul, whereabouts can we find you?
I've got various arty bits all over the interwebs. If you do a search for Kercal, K-E-R-C-A-L, you'll find all sorts of weird, rambly, doodly bits.
That sounds awesome.
Yes. Good. If somewhat abruptly terminated.
It's Helen. Brief. We're just unaccustomed.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter and primarily on app.net. You can find me in both places as Verso. You can also find me hosting... Let's start at the top. You can find me here. You can find me on Angry Mac Bastards. And you can also find me on The Mac Show elsewhere on this network, where, believe it or not, there is an episode. It's this week's show of The Mac Show where I actually don't talk that much. It's been known to happen.
I missed it. I was in France.
Yeah, well, you can actually watch. There's a moment where Ewan, like, calls on me because I really wasn't saying much. I know. It was bound to happen eventually. So. Where's
the real Kelly? What have you done with her?
Yeah, we had her earlier. We definitely had... You were saving it up for earlier, weren't you?
Yeah. That's really all it was. I read that article and I was like, oh, just you wait till
you
today.
Did you do that podcast just after you read it? And you were speechless. You were just, God. Give me the cold podcast. I want to blow.
Yeah, I was still kind of traumatized by the Silkwood shower I have to take after reading that article. So.
Well, I think we can speak for I think we were all privileged to to sit back and enjoy that one. And I said, hopefully it will go down in podcasting history. It certainly deserves to. That was a good solid 25 minutes without a single repetition, deviation, or any kind of...
Or bad word, which given I do another show where I'm allowed to do that,
or
was
even
really kind
of... Breath.
Yeah, there was like one.
I know, I heard the windows rattle.
It's one of those things that I'm so... It's so frustrating because there's like one of these a week. Anymore, and it's just, I mean, like I said, it's hard for me to keep up the energy to be this unhappy about all of them, so there you go. Excellent. Think what it had been like if I'd been really concentrating.
And I'm sure there's a show title somewhere in that 25 minutes.
Well, if there's not, awesome. We can always go with Paul Kirkle's doodly bits.
Now there's a picture I haven't drawn yet, but might have to.
Right, and with that, we're done.
Good night, nurse.
Sayonara, sunshine.
So, is it completely inappropriate to say that I have drawn my doodly bits, but it was so that I would have an anatomically correct image to work from when I put the elephant underpants on?
Nope. Perfectly in keeping.
I think we're done. Good night, everybody.
We're done. That's it.
Yeah.
My goodness.